Oh, Carly! Oh my god, it's so good to see you!
Hi, hello.
I had no idea that you were going to be in town. I wish you would have told me. I would have taken time off work.
Hi, hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, hello.
You don't really seem yourself right now. Are you okay?
Hi, hello.
You're acting really weird, and while it's great to see you, I'm just gonna go walk over here now.
Hi, hello. Hi, hello. Hi, hello. Hi, hello. Hi, hello. Hi.
Welcome to the Esoteric Footnotes.
Welcome back, goblins! You're listening to the Esoteric Book Club. Tonight, we're going to talk about a subject that I teased a little bit earlier, and that is the idea of background characters, or NPCs. But first, I need to take a moment to thank the members of the Esoteric Archive. Specifically, Grand Inquisitor Annie Kay, Grand Inquisitor Samantha, and Soul Rising Studios. Your contributions help pay server costs, purchase reading materials, and helps fund my conquest of the subterranean biomechanical race of dwarves known as the Darrow. It is shocking how bad they smell. If you too would like to help support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/esotericbookclub. Now, let's get weird. To begin, I need to define a few terms for you. All of these terms are essentially different names for the same thing. You may hear them as backdrop characters, background characters, or even NPCs, non-player characters. But they all stem from one idea. And that idea is that some people that are walking around are not conscious entities. They are creations that are simply there to provide background context for the main story that other people are telling. They are pre-programmed automatons with specific tasks that they perform, things that they don't really stray from. They don't provide any real context besides a backdrop for the story itself. If this concept makes you uncomfortable, well, good. It really should. But we'll get into that later. First, where does this concept even come from? It all begins with a woman by the name Dolores Cannon. Sort of. We'll get into it. Dolores is a self-described metaphysical investigator and has been performing hypnosis since the early 60s. Initially, she was using this skill to help people break bad habits, like smoking or overeating. But then, in 1968, she hypnotized a woman to assist her with an eating disorder. But that woman went a little farther back in time than when she was first born. She went all the way back to the 1920s, where she had a previous life as a flapper in Chicago. Over the next few months, Cannon started to regress this woman farther and farther back. She took her through 5 different incarnations, until she encountered the one that was directly incarnated from God. After experimenting on multiple other people using similar techniques, Cannon created QHHT therapy, also known as the Quantum Healing Hypnosis Technique. Now, the whole time that Cannon was doing all this work, she was also trying to get published, to no avail. So, in 1992, she simply formed her own publishing company, Ozark Mountain Publishing. Her first few books were based on information that she had gathered from her hypnotized clients, topics such as the bombing of Hiroshima and, as you could probably predict, Jesus. This is where things start to get really weird. During one of her hypnosis sessions, she encountered Nostradamus. And not like a person who was reincarnated from the consciousness of Nostradamus. No. She encountered the consciousness of Nostradamus, who was connecting to her directly from his own time and space. In fact, it got to a point where it didn't matter who Cannon had hypnotized. Nostradamus was coming through. Then in the 1980s, Cannon was introduced to the UFO phenomena after attending a MUFON meeting. She started using her unique hypnosis technique to regress alien abductees and contactees. It's through these regressions that she created the book, The Custodians. In this book, she presents the idea that those who were abducted by aliens in this lifetime had previously contracted with said aliens before they were born. Basically, these people had agreed to be abducted prior to incarnating as a human being. Eventually, Cannon came to a point where she needed to consolidate her understanding of all of these phenomena into a single cohesive story. And that's when she published The Convoluted Universe. The Convoluted Universe is a 5-volume set that was created for, quote, people who want to have their minds bent like a pretzel. It's in this book series, specifically in books 4 and 5, that we first encounter the idea of backdrop people. At least, as it's introduced by Cannon. You see, The Convoluted Universe book series was first published in 2007, 8 full years after the initial release of the smash hit movie, The Matrix. Hell, the entire Matrix trilogy was released by the time The Convoluted Universe was published. Not only that, 9 full years before the release of The Convoluted Universe, The Truman Show was released. The reason I cite these movies specifically is because in their story, there are people who are not real. People who are computer programs, or they're actors just playing a role. So the idea of backdrop people was already in the cultural zeitgeist almost a full 10 years before The Convoluted Universe even touched on the subject. Before we get too far into this, let's take a look at what Cannon actually says about backdrop people. According to her writings, Cannon didn't actually come up with this concept. It was a concept that was delivered to her by a third party through a client that she had hypnotized. Here's a quote directly from the book. These were called the backdrop people, who come to live, breathe, work and die, but have no real purpose other than to be extras in our play. The backdrop to act against. They are just energy and are taken from one star system to another to play their parts. Rather like the extras in a film who spend their entire lives playing that insignificant part and never getting to play the leading role. They are there to provide the drama for our illusion. It is now my opinion that these are the ones who will be left with the old Earth, the backdrop people, because they do not have higher vibration or purpose. End quote. I'm sure some of you picked up on the subtext there, the first being that these backdrop people aren't real and probably don't have souls, but also that everything that's happening here on Earth, also known as Old Earth, is simply a play in order to allow certain individuals to raise their vibrations and go to the New Earth. It's like a weird combination of the New Age movement and alien cults. So this is the foundation for the whole concept, a series of movies, and Dolores Cannon's The Convoluted Universe. As if that concept in itself weren't bad enough, it gets exponentially worse. Somewhere, someone decided to break down the idea of background characters a little bit more, and they decided that backdrop people, NPCs, don't have souls. That seems slightly dangerous, considering that for millennia, various groups have used the lack of a soul as justification for doing absolutely horrible things to people. So let's add that to our list of very bad things. We're going to be adding to that quite a bit throughout the rest of the show. But first, let's talk about some of the theories about backdrop people. So even though it came from the idea that these are individuals who are seeded on Earth by extraterrestrial races in order to provide a drama for those of us who actually have souls that can elevate and vibrate higher, whatever, there are other theories out there. One of which is that there is some sort of link to the Mandela effect. The Mandela effect is essentially where people as a group remember something happening that didn't happen. The best known example for this is the very event for which the phenomena is named. There are people out there, myself included, who distinctly remember news headlines of Nelson Mandela dying in prison. Except he didn't. He was released from prison, and he didn't die until many, many years later. If it were just the faulty recollection of one or two people, we could probably write this off as just a bad memory. But because so many people recall that event, it makes you wonder if something weird isn't going on. But how does this relate to backdrop people? The idea is that the people who remember variant events are those who have the capability to reach a higher vibration. Those who don't are backdrop people. Now, much like we've already heard, this takes a situation that is otherwise just kind of strange and turns it into an us versus them situation. It's no longer a question of whether you remember Berenstain Bears or Berenstain Bears. It's, are you a real person or not? It's creating this arbitrary othering of an individual or a group, and anyone that's not a part of that group is better than, or elevated, or exceptional compared to the rest. And exceptional, not for anything of real merit, but because they misremembered an event. And because of that, they're the only ones that are real, and everybody else is not. So let's add that to our list of really bad things. The othering of individuals or groups based on arbitrary measures. Have you ever felt like you were the center of attention? Have you ever felt like you were always the center of attention? Hopefully not, because if you did, that would be a major red flag for several psychological conditions. One thing I can guarantee that everybody listening has felt, at least at some point in their life, is that they felt like they were part of the background. That things didn't happen to them or didn't happen for them, they happened around them. Most of us experienced this in our childhood. Maybe your family moved to a new home, or maybe you just started a new school, or maybe you just weren't one of the popular kids. The point is that this isolation is a universal concept. It's a feeling of disconnect from your peer group or from society at large. For those of you who use tarot cards, this is the Hermit card. It is such a common feeling that there is an archetypal figure associated with it. But now, the New Age online cult of toxic positivity has turned that entirely on its head. Now there are groups saying that that feeling of isolation is what makes you exceptional. It singles you out as one of these people who can rise to a higher vibration, and that everybody around you doesn't associate with you because they're not real people. So there's the next item for our list of really bad things. A false sense of superiority. A few weeks back, when I first started posting about backdrop people and NPCs, an angry talking potato reminded me that that term is used by the alt-right to single out and dehumanize people that are left-leaning, and really at this point, let's be real, even centrist. Unsurprisingly, this term came from 4chan and is used to, quote, own the libs. That said, it has almost an identical concept to what we're already talking about. It's a way to talk about people who blindly follow the narrative, who go about their daily lives. They wake up, they go to work, they come home, they eat dinner, they go to bed, and they rest so that they can do it all again tomorrow. But they go through this routine without ever questioning why. If you were to ask one of these alt-right individuals how they know they're not an NPC, they will tell you, loudly and at great length. You may be sitting there wondering, how is the alt-right in any way associated with the New Age movement? And the answer is, they're kind of not. They're actually infiltrating groups of people who already feel as if they're outsiders, as if they are outcasts. Now, we've seen them doing this in the pagan community quite a bit in the past few years. But the New Age community is largely an untapped market for them. A market that is already primed to believe in alternative thought and conspiracy. If a person already believes that they are a Pleiadian starseed, it's a very, very short trip to jump to reptilians controlling the government. So that's the next thing on our list of really bad things. Becoming a tool of an ultra-conservative belief system. My last example is something that's come about far more recently, and that is the idea that we could all be living in one big simulation, an oversized computer program. This idea has really been around far longer than even the Matrix movies, but recently it's been picked up by, let's say, eccentric billionaires as a result of the onset of AI. As a thought experiment, I actually really like this theory, especially considering that the biggest argument in favor of it is that there would have to be some sort of arbitrary universal speed limit of some sort that dictates the speed by which the processor that runs the simulation can operate. And what was proposed is that arbitrary speed limit is the speed of light. Does that mean simulation theory is real? Maybe. Does it mean I believe in it? No, absolutely not. By itself, this theory doesn't sound too bad. Except there are extreme proponents of this theory who are using medical conditions to justify their theory. Because, of course, if this is just one big video game, there has to be NPCs in it, right? What the extreme adherents to simulation theory are saying is that people with no inner monologue, a condition known as aniduralia, or people who can't visualize things in their mind, aphantasia, those conditions are indicative of them being an NPC. Now you may question why this is worse than what we've already talked about. The problem is, in simulation theory, everything we said about certain individuals not being real, is suddenly taken literally. An NPC to an alt-right individual is someone who doesn't think freely for themselves. An NPC in simulation theory is literally not a person. It is a program, a construct of algorithms. So why is this idea far more insidious than all the others? Let's think about video games. If you're in a video game and you break into someone's house and loot it for all the valuables it has, are you arrested? If you're in a video game and you start a street fight, are there any repercussions for that? If you're in a video game and you take advantage of people, do you feel bad? If you're in a video game and you kill someone, do you feel remorse? I would say 99% of the time, your answer would be no. Now imagine if you were in the real world, and you were absolutely convinced that everything around us was a simulation, and that this was just one big computer game. How would that affect how you interact with everybody else around you? If you truly believed this, it would allow you to dehumanize massive swaths of people. And that definitely has to go on our list of really bad things. Let's review what we have on this list of really bad things. First, we have the idea that backdrop people have no soul. We have the othering of individuals or groups based on arbitrary measures. A false sense of superiority. A tool of an ultra-conservative belief system. And finally, the dehumanization of specific groups of people. When it's all broken down like this, it may seem obvious why it's bad. But let's take it a step further. What does this line of thinking actually do? So first, it discounts the autonomy of humanity in other people. They're not making choices, they're not acting in their best interests, they're following a script, they're following a program. So if they do something harmful or stupid, it's not their fault. It's actually part of the game. It was supposed to happen. Which means anything you do in response is okay. Which, in turn, excuses a person's lack of empathy towards others. Why would you treat other people well if they're not real people? This also creates this sense of superiority, of grandiosity in your own story. You are the main character. You are special. You are more important than the NPCs. Finally, discounting people as, quote, real, leads inevitably to violence and a lack of personal moral responsibility. You can't take advantage of a thing. You can't harm or murder an object. Before we go into my conclusions about all of this, I want to do one last detour. I want to take a look at what the DSM-5 lists as traits for narcissism. There are effectively 9 separate traits that psychologists will look for when determining narcissistic personality disorder. And of those 9, you only need 5 of them to qualify. So the first is a pervasive pattern of grandiosity. If you walk around thinking that you are the only real person, that kind of qualifies. If you have fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love, If only those pesky NPCs weren't there to stop your progress. If you have a belief in being special and unique and can only be understood by, or should be associated with, other special or high-status people. Well, you can't associate with NPCs. You have to associate with, quote, the real people, right? If there is an excessive need for admiration. Now, this one's a little trickier, but you have to look online for this. You'll actually see it pop up quite a bit in chat rooms and forums. You'll find people posting saying stuff like, "My husband is an NPC and I clearly love him, but sometimes I just can't." That seeking of empathy, of admiration, "Oh, you're such a brave individual for putting up with an NPC." That is attention-seeking behavior above and beyond the norm. The next trait is a lack of empathy, and honestly, if you are discounting large swaths of the population as being not real, I'd say that is a given. Next is a sense of interpersonal entitlement. This one's a little tricky until you wrap your brain around the idea of playing inside a computer game or a computer system. It's not their fault that they're not paying attention to you, right? They're NPCs. They don't know any better. They're just following a script. If only they knew the truth, they would worship you like a god. But since they're not real and they're following a script, that means that you can exploit them. And that's the next trait, taking advantage for your own personal gain. And of course, you won't feel any remorse for this. They got what they deserve. They follow their script, and you took advantage of it. That level of arrogance is the next trait. The final trait is envy. This one's a little weird, too. But imagine you're newly awakened to the idea of being a real person. If everyone around you is an NPC, and they're doing better than you, how is that possible? They're just following a script. You're a real person. You should be able to do better than all of them, because you're the only person that has real free will. So how are they ahead of you? If only you had the same tools and resources that they did. As you can see, there's a lot of parallels between narcissistic personality disorder and the idea of background characters. My take on this is that we're all main characters. We're main characters in our own stories, mostly because you can't jump into someone else's body and control their actions. The best analogy that I saw for this is that life isn't a video game per se, it's more like an MMORPG, one where real people all get online at the same time to compete in a collective sandbox environment. It's not a great analogy because it's still a video game, but you get the idea. It's not a solo video game where one real person is interacting with a bunch of scripted NPCs. It's randomness, it's chaos. There's not always rhyme or reason as to what people are doing or why they do it. The fact that we're the main character in our own stories doesn't discount us from also being an NPC in someone else's story. Our actions have impacts on everybody else around us, whether we intend them to or not. Hell, there are entire religions built around the practice of being fully conscious and aware of all your actions. Even then, it's not necessarily something that's supposed to be achieved. It is a goal to strive for. It is a philosophy. It's a way of life. Do I think there's NPCs out there? Sure. But they're not NPCs all the time. Sometimes they're main characters. Sometimes they're supporting characters. Sometimes they're the background. Everyone has a role to play, and that role changes by scenario, by situation. Life is dynamic. It's always changing, whether good or bad. All we can do is react to it. But dehumanizing and sticking groups of people into specific boxes, that's not going to make our lives any easier. The best way to push back against this dehumanizing concept of background people is, ironically, by using the very thing that it seeks to erase: empathy. We got a little dark tonight, didn't we? I wish I had a more positive note to end on, but really, this line of thought is pretty gross and pretty insidious, and we're starting to see a lot more of it, especially on the online communities. And it's not even just about a lack of empathy. This can lead to some really, really dark places. But for now, that's all I have for you. So until next time, remember, stay weird.